Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Despite lawsuits, years of complaints, and a recent patient death that was ruled a homicide, advocates for the mentally ill say too often Massachusetts treats those suffering from mental illness as criminals.
At issue is Bridgewater State Hospital, which is actually a medium security prison that provides mental health care for prison inmates, including mental health patients who've never been convicted of crimes.
The Boston Globe has reported recently on the use of physical restraints and isolation at Bridgewater, including on the case of Joshua Messier. He died in 2009 as six guards with no mental health training struggled violently to strap his wrists and ankles to a bed. Authorities ruled his death was a homicide.
Then there's the case of Peter Minnick, who suffers from schizophrenia. He was admitted to Bridgewater last year after he assaulted two workers in a psychiatric hospital. He's never been convicted of a crime, but at Bridgewater, guards held him in seclusion and in restraints for the better part of 14 months until his mother filed suit. And we'll hear from her in just a moment.
But first, attorney Eric McLeish, who represents Peter Minnick. McLeish wrote in today's Boston Globe about what he calls the crime of mental illness. He says in Massachusetts, many with schizophrenia are locked up in barren cells, tightly bound and alone. If it happened anywhere else, we'd call it torture. So why is it happening here? Eric McLeish is with the firm of Clark, Hunt, Ahern, and Embry in Cambridge, and he joins us today from New Hampshire. Eric McLeish, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. Nice to be here.
So there's a broad problem here, obviously, but talk to me first about Peter Minnick. Describe something about the way he was being treated or held at Bridgewater but before his family filed suit.
Well, Peter spent the better part of 14 months in isolation, and when he was not in isolation, going outside the facility for electric shock treatments, and then also in mechanical restraint, which means he's being tied down with straps on a bed for periods as long as 50 hours. He's not released from those restraints. He has to defecate into a bedpan. Occasionally an arm will be released for him to urinate. But this is absolutely barbaric. These are medieval conditions involving a man who has a biologically based illness.
Now, you've been inside the seclusion area at Bridgewater. Describe to us what that's like.
Well, there was an interesting piece on Frontline last night that really showed what a seclusion unit looked like. And these are solid steel doors. You can't really hear that well through them. There's a slot where, for example, Peter's meals were delivered to him on those occasions when he was allowed to talk to his mother or father on the telephone. The telephone would be pushed through the slot. So he was held in really complete isolation, no contact with other people. He was occasionally allowed out, but usually only for brief periods of time. The Commissioner of Correction in Colorado went into solitary in a Colorado prison voluntarily for 20 hours and started having auditory hallucinations. I mean, the technique of isolation and solitary confinement was developed first by the CIA, where they tested it on college students in the 1950s. And they had to stop the experiment because of the hallucinations and psychosis that college students developed within days after being locked up in solitary. So imagine that you're already hearing voices in your head. Peter has, again, a biologically based illness, schizophrenia. And imagine hearing those voices and being all alone, no reading materials, no television, no computer, nothing to do for the better part of 14 months.
I want to, Eric, just hold on 2 seconds, because I just want to put this thought out there. We did reach out to the Department of Corrections to invite them on the program today. A spokesman said he'd be delighted to participate, but not today. He said another time, so we will look forward to that at some point in the near future. I'll probably mention that a couple of times during this conversation, just because this conversation does call out for a response from DOC. But Eric, what does the family want for Peter? What's the aim of the lawsuit in which you're representing them?
Well, this is not a lawsuit at this point for money damages. I was, this is a pro bono lawsuit. I was contacted by Mrs. Minich and asked to help for her son. I'd been involved with Bridgewater back in the 1980s, and there was a consent decree that prohibited this same type of practice from occurring. And there was the creation of a medium-secure DMH facility where individuals who had mental illness and who had challenging behavior could be sent. So the aim of the lawsuit, this is not a class action, although it could be expanded into one. The aim of the lawsuit principally is to get people like Peter out of this isolation where their psychosis and their mental illness will become more severe. Secondarily, the aim of the lawsuit, we are really unlike any other state from what I can see in the country, in that we take people who have not been convicted, and Peter's quote-unquote alleged crimes, they were pushing and striking out while under heavy doses of medication. He's not a violent person. He could never hurt anybody. But they were crimes that he was sent to Bridgewater for a competency evaluation. But even if convicted, he has no criminal record. These were misdemeanors. He could never, ever have served time in a prison. So the backdoor way that the Department of Mental Health gets these profoundly ill people into Bridgewater is by charging them with petty criminal offenses that are in large part a manifestation of their illness. They're sent to Bridgewater for evaluation on criminal charges, and then they can be committed there indefinitely. And that's what's happened to Peter and many other people, too.
Well, I want to ask you about that, about the other people. There are some, 340 right. folks at Bridgewater. Some right. of them are violent criminals. Many are not. How many others are there like Peter Minich, do you think? Mentally ill, but being treated like this.
This is one of the reasons why I wish the Department of Correction was on the phone right now so we could get answer to these questions and answers from Governor Patrick. But what I've been told by the Office of Public Counsel is that there are between about 50% to two-thirds of Bridgewater's patients are civilly committed in that they have not been charged with crimes, they're not serving criminal sentences, they're sent to Bridgewater, which is, as you correctly noted, a correctional facility, not a hospital. They're sent there for evaluation. In terms of the number of individuals who suffered from schizophrenia, which again is not something that's the result of volitional choices or bad upbringing or things that people do. Peter graduated from Wellesley High School. Other people who've gone to Bridgewater, it's a very late in life, well, not late, but it's a post-high school, typically for men, onset of psychiatric illness. And so what I've been told by the Office of Public Counsel that works on their own commitments is there are between 70 and 100 people with major mental illnesses such as schizophrenia and manic depressive disorder that are there. And that's just wrong. It's not done that way in any other state. And it's embarrassing, really, that it's happening in a state that's known for its progressive treatment of individuals with disabilities. It's very, very hard to understand how this is now recurring again.
Where, Eric, though, does the buck stop? It's we talked about the case of Joshua Messier, who actually died at Bridgewater at the hands of guards. On the other hand, these guards aren't trained in this kind of care. So I'm just wondering, where do you think the buck stops? Is it with the governor? Is it the Department of Mental Health? Is it the Department of Corrections? Or is it among all of us and a lack of commitment to proper mental health care in this state?
I think it's a shame that people have to die before someone pays attention. Bridgewater is a major part of the Massachusetts correctional system. And one of the interesting things is that the law requires, first of all, that people can only be secluded or isolated for extreme violence, attempted suicide, or personal injury. Mm. And that was clearly not the case with Josh Messier, and it was clearly not the case with Peter Minich. Josh Messier died in 2009. And Governor Patrick has been aware of the problems at Bridgewater since that time. This was a tragic death. There was publicity shortly afterwards in 2011 and 2012. And yet nothing was really done about the seclusion and isolation problem until we filed suit. Peter is now completely out of isolation. He's been living in the infirmary, and for the last week or so, he's been doing very well. That was what we went to court for to try to obtain. But it raises the obvious question, what about all these other people that are there that have the same diagnosis? I know of many other individuals who spend pretty much all of their time in seclusion at the intensive, as they call it, the intensive treatment unit. And this is basically putting people into very harsh conditions of confinement because of a biologically based illness. It would be like saying to people with Alzheimer's, yes, we're going to help you as your government, but what we're going to do is we're going to take your son or your daughter, we're going to put them in prison, and when they go into prison, they're going to be held in isolation. Mm. There's a lot of responsibility here. I think that, you know, certainly it starts at the top with the governor. But it's really something in our society. I mean, unless we have someone who is at Bridgewater, do we really care? And why is this happening in an administration that I think, you know, it's had its difficulties with DCF and child protection, but it presents itself as people who care about these issues. And I just don't understand how this could have happened.
Well,
it's our collective responsibility to do something about it.
I think that last point is particularly significant, Eric. Eric McLeish, stand by. I want to introduce Joanne Minnick. She's the mother of Peter Minnick, and she joins us from Brookline. Joanne Minnick, thanks for being with us.
Oh, yes. Thank you for asking me to come.
I know you've been listening to this conversation so far. What's your hope for your son, Peter?
I just want him to have humane treatment, and I want him out of Bridgewater. I don't want him in that society. His confinement there has been frightening and inhumane, and it's not right what's gone on, and I could not stand by any longer and do nothing about it. You know, he has an organic brain disease, and when not hearing voices, he's a kind, sincere, and caring young man. You know, he's a great artist and a fierce Scrabble player. And we have struggled for many years to make sure that he has the best care possible. But his downward and aggressive spiral started at the Department of Mental Health in Bridgewater after our private insurance ran out at McLean's. He has no criminal record. He hasn't been convicted of any crime. And his only crime is his illness. And that
right.
in itself is enough of a life sentence. You know,
Joanna, we can certainly hear the concern of a mother speaking here. And I just want to ask you, what effect restraint and isolation had on your son? What effect did it have on his illness?
It's made him very skittish around people. I was visiting him yesterday, and, you know, he was trying to make contact with people. He's just been so isolated for so long that, you know, human contact isn't something that he's used to. So that's very detrimental to him. But God bless him. He's resilient, you know, and I'm hoping that he'll get better. He actually has been outside, and he looks like he's actually gotten some vitamin D. And, you know, it is getting better, and it's not right that we had to do this. We
yeah.
have to go through all of this.
And correct me if I'm wrong, and Eric, you can jump in here too, but Joanne, please correct me. I understand that he is now being treated in the infirmary. That's the result of an interim settlement agreement that you worked out.
Correct.
In which Bridgewater also promises to use seclusion and restraints only as a last resort, and eventually transition him out of Bridgewater when possible. So,
right.
So do you feel that the victory is complete for your son?
Yes, yes, I do. That part I am so pleased with. I mean, we've been able to visit him before. We had to visit him when he was shackled and locked in a cage, and that's degrading and inhumane. Something, you know, he should not be shackled while he's locked up in a cage, and not to be allowed fresh air, not be allowed water. One time, one of the guards wouldn't give him water when I was there, and I thought, this is inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
This just can't happen anymore. And my concern now is for my son and his situation, but also for those others who have no voice. You know, no human being should be treated like this. Every human life is precious and worth fighting for. The system needs to change.
Mm.
I just don't want anyone else to go through what my son has endured. And he and the others deserve better treatment, and something needs to happen.
We reached out again, I want to just say, to the Department of Corrections today. They were unable to join us for this conversation. But in the meantime, a statement reported in the Boston Globe said the following: DOC is fully committed to ensuring mentally ill patients at Bridgewater State Hospital receive the best care. And Joanne, it said the interim agreement with you reaffirms that commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, go ahead, Joanne, respond
to
that.
Well, make sure that's actually
really
carried out.
It really doesn't, reaffirm anything about Bridgewater's commitment to care. When we negotiated consent decrees back in the late 1980s, it doubled the level of clinical staffing, which has now dropped back to the 1980s level. So that's really an outrageous statement by the Department of Correction. It's untrue. There are still individuals at Bridgewater that are spending substantially all of their time in seclusion. Let me just give you this statistic. If you are in a DMH facility, you are likely to spend 100 times the number of hours in seclusion and restraint than you are than if you are at Bridgewater. So why is that? I mean, yes, the patient population may be more difficult, more challenging, but as long as we have this system where DMH can simply go forward and file petty criminal charges against patients and get them not only out of their hospital, but out of the whole DMH system and over to Bridgewater, this is going to continue to happen. This is a correctional facility. It's not a therapeutic milieu. It's a punitive milieu. So Peter was punished, for example, for yelling, for disobeying a correctional officer's command. I mean, these are things that happen in prisons.
And the, the way that he was dumped is atrocious, absolutely atrocious. They should not, the Department of Mental Health should not be allowed to conduct this in this manner.
Clearly a lot of issues are being raised here that we're going to have to dive into in the weeks and months ahead. Eric, I want to just come back to something that you wrote this morning in the Boston Globe. You wrote, Governor Deval Patrick has a chance to end all of this, and the next months will be critical to see if he has the leadership and commitment to do so. How can he end all this? What are you referring to specifically?
Well, first of all, there has to be a honest reckoning of what's been going on at Bridgewater. How many people have died down there while they've been secluded or restrained? How many people have been who are there are civilly committed? We can't even get that basic information. How many of them have major mental illnesses such as schizophrenia, manic depressive disorder that could be treated in a less restrictive environment? The second thing that he needs to do is to go back to what we agreed back in the late 1980s. There are patients, and I'm not even suggesting Peter is one of them, but there are patients who can become behaviorally involved who suffer from these illnesses. Not everybody. It's a very small percentage. But what we need to do is to have a medium secure facility within the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that is administered by the Department of Mental Health. So the Department of Mental Health will not simply be able to file bogus criminal charges against patients that they're, quite frankly, in some cases, just too lazy to take care for. And that's what happened with Peter. I mean, Peter was not a difficult to manage patient. He was never violent. What he did was is that he wouldn't just sleep in his room all day like many of the patients are requested to do at DMH.
It facility. Also sounds like so he requires medical professionals rather than guards, right?
Yeah, I mean, the guards at Bridgewater are able to initiate seclusion and mechanical restraint and then get a doctor to sign off on it.
Yeah.
But it's not a therapeutic clinical environment. There's no training, significant mental health training for guards. There's no restraint or seclusion certification that you would have in a private facility that, you know, I would suggest was responsible for the death of Josh Messier because those guards were not trained properly in the use of restraint. So there needs to be a whole review of the system, but Massachusetts must make a commitment that we're not going to take people that suffer from these major mental illnesses, criminalize them, put them in prison, and shut the door.
All right.
I mean, just one more thing I'd like to add.
Very quickly, if you would, Eric. I know it's an important issue, but go ahead.
When Peter was in seclusion and restraint, in many ways, his conditions were as harsh as those in supermax prisons in Guantanamo. No exercise, not allowed to go outside, not able to have meals or activities with anybody else. It was barbaric.
Eric McLeish is an attorney with the firm of Clark Hunt, Ahern & Embry. He wrote an opinion piece in today's Boston Globe about the plight of the mentally ill in Massachusetts. You can find a link to that at radioboston.org. Eric McLeish, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Joanne Minnick is the mother of Peter Minnick, who has schizophrenia, is being kept at Bridgewater State Hospital. The Minnick family's lawsuit against the hospital is pending. Joanne Minnick, many thanks to you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Stay with us. Much more to come. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.